And this is really just a time for straight comments. Were there things that were not said that we ought to talk about? Or unfinished thoughts, unfinished discussions?
I had a thought about a situation where I would know a husband was abusing his wife, and still accept him in my home or socially, and I just wondered what you're thinking or other people's thinking might be about. You know, should, in honesty, should you confront the person and say, I just can't do this? In other words, I think it's false knowing sometimes that this person is a very abusive person and yet treat him as though nothing is going on. To let him, in other words, let it go. Isn't that sort of dishonest?
It may not be good for the person, because it usually takes some kind of confrontation before an abuser realizes that he or she needs help. The person being abused frequently is not one who can do it. You know? So sometimes I think it is up to some of us to think of it this way, that it's not a betrayal, that it's not meant to be a humiliation of the person, but it's meant to say, hey, maybe you and I should sit down because I have a feeling that you're struggling with something and you may not even realize that you are. Did you know that it's not normal for husbands to beat their wives? Yes. You know, that's an abnormal thing to do.
But
that there are more healthy ways to deal with things.
If the couple is still coming, say, to your house, and you confront the abuser and he says, we're not going there anymore, isn't that shutting off one of that other person's doors of being able to be, if the role of the abuser is to confine
that's right.
the spouse, to limit social contact?
Probably then before one of these confrontations takes place, it's really important to talk to the woman, the person being abused, and say, what is it that you need at this point, because that's an important place for caretaking. It's always a good idea before making any move to see if there's a local place that can assist you. You know, is there a shelter or some counselors with specialties in the area who can tell you what's the best way for me to handle this as a neighbor or close friend? They're the guides. Plus, you already have a built-in resource. You know, I know these people who do counseling for abusers, or I know this shelter where women and children can go.
Well, I certainly wouldn't even consider doing any confrontation of the abuser without, well, one, thinking very hard about it, and offering still the friendship and the contact to the person who's being abused, and a shelter if that were necessary.
We do have a group in Salinas for men who are wife abusers now.
So it is a kind of befriending to the person who's an abuser, I think, too.
But it does seem so sort of dishonest to pretend there's nothing there.
That's right. Because that's
and I don't have a situation at the present time, but I know that certainly in the past I must have.
Well, frequently the family is already ignoring that there is a problem there. It doesn't necessarily help for everybody else to do that, too. Note that it won't help to do generalized programs in the church either, usually. Because people being, programs, you know.
Are the abusers going to come and say, here I am, folks?
No. And in fact, they won't recognize themselves as the type of person you're talking about. Because usually they don't know that they're doing something out of the ordinary. There's a skewed sense of reality and how people ought to be in a relationship. So they think they're just doing what they ought to as Christians sometimes, you know, the sort of spare the rod, spoil the child mentality, which lets some Christian parents think they can physically abuse their children and feel justified about that. So it's a difficult kind of circumstance. So what you're talking about is that odd sense of how even if one family is disrupted within the body of Christ, the rest of us begin to feel awkward in our contacts. Begin to wonder about what is honest for ourselves, what would be healing, what is our responsibility. Is there more on that, or are there other kinds of things you wanted to finish up today?
Hey, Pam and I were talking about something yesterday when we were walking that I think may be abuse, I'm not sure. Users. That is abuse, isn't it?
Users?
Or is it?
Mm-hmm. I think it is.
Users, and what, how do you mean? Give an example.
Well, we were talking to Connie, and it is man. A man using a woman to get what he wants. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know my roommate who married the abusive guy? Mm-hmm. She had been through a series of boyfriends without jobs.
Okay.
Who would move in and live off her for a while and then move on. You know.
Why did she allow this?
I don't know. These questions are very complex. You know, they have to do with self-esteem and that she felt better with a male in her life, even if it was a bad male rather than a good one. She was from an alcoholic family, which gave her an odd sense of what good relationships ought to be like. She had been the oldest child who did the caretaking of her parents, so now she just had a pattern of taking care of other hard luck cases. It's sometimes hard to figure out all the connections that make someone receive abuse of these sorts. By the time she was 35, she knew she was being used in those ways. She could identify that as a problem that she sort of played into. And without blaming the victim, we can say sometimes that, look at how I got sucked into this. You know?
Yeah.
Whether we are the abused person or friends of the abused person, boy, you know, if I have failed in my responsibilities to my friends over these matters, I feel...
You felt that you did?
Well, you know, if
you could, couldn't you?
Yeah. I feel that I am at least a co-conspirator in the problem somehow just ignore or play into the whole sequence of events.
Well, I have a friend whose husband was having an affair, and anyway, these were best friends, the two couples. Lori called him and chewed him up one side and down the other. And that's okay. It didn't do any good at all. Mm-hmm. But at least she told him how she felt about this. Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of times it doesn't do any good in the moment that you do it. It usually takes a series of things happening that really bring abusers and the abused into some kind of realization about what's going on.
Yeah.
We have a secretary in the office that fits those guides that you read just to the T. I mean, husband's calling 10 times a day, she can't wipe her nose without him knowing, and she's in the kind of the loop of coming in and complaining about him, and she gained attention that way. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking of what, you know, you started. Well, how would you deal with this? She knows at some level she's being abused. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what you would do to handle that situation. She really enjoys talking about it. Mm-hmm. That's one of the benefits that she feels she gets out of dealing with the situation. You know? So where do you not feed the loop in that situation?
Depends on how close you are to a person sometimes, but I'd be tempted to say, you know, I've been in this office with you 2 years now. Have you ever thought about leaving this guy?
Oh, yeah.
He makes you so miserable.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be gentle and at least begin to help ask the questions.
Yeah, why don't you leave this guy? He has a whole list of things.
Yeah. course. Yeah. I really love him. You know, it was a favorite one. Mm-hmm. We have children.
My mother, well, yeah, she's got some other, other, extenuating.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it can be a whole ton of things.
Yeah, I, you know, listening to her day after day almost seems like it's feeding a loop.
Mm-hmm. What I never could figure out is why my roommate couldn't leave, since she was the one making all the family income. She was the one buying the condo.
And Diane is the one that probably contributes the main support, or at least 60%. So it's kind of, where do you break the loop? Where do you,
I finally broke the loop for my roommate. He kidnapped her cat. She said, this is where I draw the line. So this is abusive.
Yeah, well, maybe that's the next question. Where's your money back?
How far would he have to go before you could say
She came in and she had a bruise on her face the other day.
Oh, wow.
And she, fell off something or other. It didn't even occur to me. I feel awfully naive. Mm-hmm. But somebody else said, well, what do you think?
But isn't what I worked with a woman like that too, and I think I was with her for 5 years, and you just have to be constantly supporting her.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it was not so much a male that was abusive in her life, but it was her family used her.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to keep supporting the person. I was always giving her things, read this, this, whether it did good or not good, you just keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. In The Color Purple, what really gets Celie out of her pattern of being an abused person is that somebody finally loves her enough to say, you are beautiful, you are smart.
Yeah, I've been trying that tactic of
You've got so much to offer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's hard to hear for a lot of people who are abused, but sometimes eventually it can work and be empowering. Your presence, being affirming, can help break the cycle.
In a situation like that, too, a person, she's getting to a point, or probably is at a point and has been, that she really is not well.
Mm-hmm. No, she's not. There's some real classic patterns and stuff. But it's really tough to know how to deal with how you're helping out and all.
But talking about, just even you're talking about what you would expect or would not tolerate, and, having a learning process there for her is...
Mm-hmm.
How do we make your church consistent in their message that you are wonderful, you are a child of God, you are worthwhile?
Mm-hmm.
The Catholic Church that I left with, it's always mea culpa, mea culpa, I am not worthy. Yeah. And after a while, you get to a point and say, I am worthy.
Yeah. I finally got fed up with it while I was in seminary, and I started preaching a series of sermons called I Am Not a Wretch. All those hymns that talk about what worms and wretches we are, thank you, Luther. You helped give us that language. Are not helpful to people who already are overly critical of themselves. I first decided to launch in that series when I was preaching at a women's college, and had been a campus pastor around, so I knew that these women already felt humiliated, stupid, incompetent, and they did not need to hear another sermon that said you are not worthy and you need to be doing a lot more.
It's always do a lot more. You can do more.
Well, this goes way back to childhood, doesn't it?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
College is a very powerful place where you start to see some effects of abuse. There are days when I have students who are really bright sit in my office just weeping because they can't do a project. And I know they can because they're some of the most brilliant observers in the classroom. And sometimes I'll just stop and say, you don't have to tell me, but I'd like you to think about this question. What tape are you playing in your head that tells you you are not capable of this, that you are too stupid to do this? Some students then disclose that, you know, they've heard all their lives from their parents that they were stupid, that they would never amount to anything. And I said, you're still playing your parents' voices in your head. Now, look at me. I'm the one with the PhD in religion, and I'm telling you, you're smart. You know, can you believe that? You know, and just to shake them out of, you know, to stop having those messages, abusive messages play, even when the abusers aren't present anymore. It takes a lot of pain and effort to get through. We're actually, it's so overwhelming that we have a session at our national meeting this year on what to do when students disclose to us that they are abused, you know, what, through date rape, through parental abuse, and all sorts of other things.
Through work?
Mm-hmm.
Through work?
Yeah.
I just came out of an abusive work situation that I didn't even realize what was happening to me until I started having the same type of feelings that I had when I was in my marriage. And I did go for counseling, and I said, this is how I felt, you know, 15 years ago, and I'm feeling this again. And we worked through it, that it really was my supervisor. He was extremely abusive to me.
To everybody.
But to me, when it's, oh my gosh. And of course, the answer for the psychologist said, you've got to leave that job. You can't leave your job. It's like, I can't leave this marriage.
Yeah.
This is what is sustaining me. I have to go back every day and get beaten up some more because I've got to eat.
Well, they restructured and laid me off, and wow, was that nice.
It actually worked.
Yeah.
Did everybody notice the whiteboard, which I understand Vermont contributed?
Yes. Yeah, the big effort we had on campus last year was to teach students that they could say no to faculty members who were abusive.
Oh.
You know, whether sexually abusive or verbally assaulted. All kinds of ways.
Did it work for the faculty to know that students could say no to them?
The faculty, oddly enough, was the most resistant group. Can you imagine that?
No.
Talking about how often they are unjustly accused. Yeah, right. Do you know how hard it is for a 19-year-old to tell a 50-year-old professor that she would like him to take his hands off her? You know? They just don't launch into this for no good reason. So, and it was helpful for a lot of students to hear a number of faculty people say, we would support you if our colleagues are causing you problems.
But what happens to, in all of this litigation stuff, of the person who sincerely touches? You know, there are times now that I couldn't do that if I were boss. And Sarah was my employee. I couldn't do that to her. And yet, you need that contact. What's happening with that?
It started in the 1960s. I know my kids, two of my kids were in high school then. And I remember very wonderful being a girls at this high school. All Maude did was very kindly tell this student with her arm around my business, patting on the shoulder, I'm sorry, but that's not allowed. And the student's answer was, you cannot touch me. Get your hands off, or I will sue you. And unfortunately, they could get by with it. There are still some sincere teachers, I believe. And you're right, you do need warm fuzzies, you know, but you can't supply that anymore. You can, but you really have to know who you're patting on the shoulder, you know?
That's where communication comes in, then. If you
yeah.
feel uncomfortable with someone touching you, then you need to let them know that.
You do, right.
And then that person needs to respect that.
Oh, yeah. But you don't have the way this was done.
At Eucharist, if you go like this, then that means you shake your hand. If you go like this, then you hug them. And some people feel more comfortable yeah. with one or the other. And and maybe it is hard. I think it is hard for us to communicate honestly with each other because you don't want to say, don't touch me, I don't feel comfortable with you touching me, because that's kind of a, you know, that says I don't trust you in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at the same time, if you don't feel comfortable with it, you really do have to
yeah.
let someone know that.
Yeah. A handshake is always good.
Yeah.
Or just holding out your hand in yeah. other ways that say, that are an invitation, but don't require, you know, don't touch without giving.
But this is when the no touching starts.
Mm-hmm.
And kids yeah. in grammar school even know it now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that whenever there's a reform of any kind, I mean, all this abusive business is coming out in all areas, that this pendulum always swings far mm-hmm. to the other side,
yes.
you know, that everything becomes exaggerated one way or the other. And it just, and it has to level off. And you just live through it until mm-hmm. it does.
Yeah, I hope it will. And I think most people aren't having, a lot of people are not having a panic reaction.
Yeah.
You know, my colleagues sometimes are good-hearted. But, you know, when a senior tenured colleague puts his arm around my shoulder when he wouldn't do it to one of his male colleagues,
yeah,
I'd have to say, you know,
mm-hmm.
hey, Paul, would you do this to Doug?
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Or something. And just
yeah.
say, look at the difference. I mean, you know, this is not hostile or anything, Paul, but I just want you to notice the difference in the treatment and just think about it. And I think that having those kinds of open communications about how we're feeling about things are really helpful, you know. This colleague didn't hurt me in any way and didn't mean any harm, but I think it is important just to talk about what touching dynamics mean in the workplace. You know, and to say, why do you think you can touch a female colleague this way but not a male colleague?
Is it abusive to say to a female colleague or worker, so forth, well, I see you have your hair done. That looks nice.
Depends on the colleague.
Is that abusive?
I don't think that's abusive if you came and said, well, baby, your hair looks really hot like that or something.
That's a problem. Yeah.
Then
that's
that
a problem.
Different.
Yeah.
I mean,
commentary on books.
Women get their hair done, or they may change glasses. The men do the same
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, I'm totally.
But, and, and I just happen to know those kind of things. Notice those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a friend of mine, he has his mustache cut off and his hair curled. I say, hey, that looks pretty nice. What are you changing? And so with women in the office, wherever, I say, oh, I see you had your hair done today. Or when did you get it done? It's changed. Is that abusive?
You know, it really, for me, depends on the circumstance,
yeah.
I think. If a colleague passed me in the hall and said, hey, I see you changed your hair, I'd say, yeah, you know, and just walk on. Colleague backs me into the corner in his office and says,
I see you changed your hair.
Yeah.
You're
then
right.
I have different feelings about it. Or if the colleague has repeatedly backed me into corners
mm-hmm.
in his office and then passes me in the hall and is always making comments about my hair or my clothes or something else,
feelings
then that's a further intimidation.
Yeah,
so.
It's the feelings that go behind it.
Yeah. It's context,
yeah,
context in part two.
I mean, I don't personally take it offensive that there's nothing behind it. It's just a something you notice, and you want to say something nice, you know, it's fine.
And for men, sometimes with women and with other men, but particularly women, it's a reaction to something. Like my secretary came in the office and said, "I'm leaving my job,"
mm-hmm.
and she said, "I'm going to miss this office," and she gives me a hug,
mm-hmm.
and then I hug her, and she's
mm-hmm.
shorter than I am, but my reaction is, I kissed her on the top of her head, right there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, may I touch you? I kissed her on the top of her head, right there. And it was just, I said, don't report me now. You know, something
yeah.
like that. But that kind of thing is, there's certain kind of reactions that thing happen. I know the answer to that reflex is, of course, it's according to the circumstances. I know that. But if it does get to be a situation where you, where it's difficult, even a handshake. Yeah. You talk about a handshake, you don't know how to do that. You have to be like a salesman, you hold your hand right here.
Yeah.
See if you can do that, you know?
I know some women, they get really irate if a man holds the door open.
That's
ridiculous. And that one's kind of a classic.
That's right.
We are in a period of renegotiation. I think it usually is a good idea to wait for the person who has less power and authority in a circumstance to take the initiative, mm-hmm. I think. On the other hand, as a professor, I am very careful sometimes about not responding to students' initiatives. Because sometimes students can be so enamored of the power that their professors have that they think that they have a crush on you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So you respond with the hug, and you're encouraging something that you know is wrong in the context. You know it's a misuse of your power, that the right thing to do is to strongly communicate to the student by body language or directly that this is crossing a boundary of some kind. I would be irresponsible if I encouraged you in your affection toward me. So it's a matter of learning to read people better and to communicate directly to them. Well, I don't mind us going past 9:30. It is 9:30 already, though. But one thing that I wanted to say today that struck me as interesting about this weekend is how freely it feels like we're talking now, and in our small male-female groups, how easy that was. And even in some of the larger sessions we had in here, people were very candid at times. And then last night when we got the whole community together, or virtually the whole community, I walked in the room and there was tension that felt like this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my observation is, if that happens at Holden in a community that I personally trust a lot, that I know is sensitive and reflective, how much more difficult is the work outside this space? Mm-hmm. Which means that, the honest truth is I feel very pessimistic about what can really be accomplished sometimes.
How many new faces were there here last night? I know there were two. I wondered about that last night. I said, well, maybe it is very tight last night because there are at least two new faces here.
But I was in part reacting to the commentary, and I think it's a perfectly valid comment that men are tired of hearing about women abuse. You know, that's, to me, was okay. This is not, that's shading my feelings towards an open environment, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Well, somebody had made that remark.
Yes.
A man made a remark, he's tired of
hearing
about women's abuse. And then, frankly, men get tired.
Yeah, there's nothing I can do, so.
There's nothing, and another commentary, there's nothing we can do. So
that's because men don't understand how much they're being abused by the system.
But this community does, and I know because I was in the men's group.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that group of men talked about what they could do to be supportive of women who are abusing. Mm-hmm. And I know that while I've been here this weekend, several men have disclosed to me things like clergy abuse toward them.
Mm-hmm. And all that, but just that kind of, doesn't take much, I guess, sometimes, but later.
Did you feel the same when you left last night, as this group last night, as you felt when you came in?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it didn't shatter my trust in the group by any means. It just made me realize how difficult the issue is, once more. How difficult it is for Christian communities to deal with it.
I think it's more difficult within the framework of a church. I was just thinking of a lot of things, but one of them is that I've been in visiting groups going to the state penitentiary, how much easier it is there to talk about things.
than it is sitting around mm-hmm. in the church lounge discussing the same issues. Mm-hmm. And that church is the last place. And I was abused in a marriage, and I wanted to go and talk to somebody about it. And I went way across town to somebody that I thought nobody else would know, and especially no one in our church. Mm-hmm. You know?
What, and what your observation is quite right. I know that this service was used with a group of women who were strangers to each other. One part that I used. Mm-hmm. And these women would open up to each other like this. Mm-hmm.
So maybe a part of it is that our sin of pride and the sin of we are not, we say as Lutheran Christian people that we believe in the grace, you know, that faith and grace, but we don't practice it with one another.
Mm-hmm. Maybe so. I mean, the other striking thing is my students put together services like this all the time and open up instantly to each other. And they only see each other 4 hours a week for a total of 14 weeks.
Margaret and I were talking about this a little bit this morning, and I don't know how many of you were at breakfast for matins, but I read this thing from Zorba the Greek that talked about seeing things for the first time and realizing that they've just come out of God's hands, etc., etc. And the reason why I read that partially was for the retreat that we're starting today with the community, and partially because of a reaction to what happened last night, because, you know, I was sitting there also being a person who was being quiet instead of voicing something and feeling the tension. And as I was thinking about that last night, I think part of it is that the last thing I want to start this community with is everybody here thinking, this is what Sarah is, and because people know very little about anybody else, really. So if you start with this preconceived notion that, well, here's Sarah, the abused one, and I'm, you know, if I were the only person who said something, then suddenly I would have felt, you know, and I guess that says a lot about being in a community where everybody knows you and trying to start and learn about people and see people in different ways and not just with this thing that I don't consider to be a major part of myself, but something mm-hmm. that I do carry around with myself. And so, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just, it might, that's why it totally rings true when you say, I can totally see myself at school mm-hmm. doing that, but just coming out and saying things, or even more especially being with a group of people that I don't know at all.
Mm-hmm. I am with a group of people I don't know at all, and I didn't feel compelled to say anything. Mm-hmm. The tension is there.
Yeah, that's the part that was weird.
Mm-hmm.
That there was a tension in the room that kept people from talking, or made it uncomfortable for people to talk. I wonder if that might very well happen at churches too.
I think so. I have a friend. She must be like 42 maybe, but at any rate. It's a real neat family. This poor gal has been sexually abused by her mother's husbands and boyfriends for, you know, when she was a child. But at any rate, she has a real neat husband.
Why is it a neat family?
No, this is not. No, I'm not talking about her. I'm talking about Larry and Regina. They have three or four really good kids. And they are, it's a nice family, but it's not as nice as it appears. He emotionally abuses her at the drop of a hat,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she calls in tears about this. And I've asked her, why don't you talk to the pastor? Oh, I couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Larry's on the church council.
Yeah.
Big deal. You know, who cares?
22 years of it, folks,
yeah.
Right here.
Mm-hmm.
Graduate of Concordia College and all the right credentials and so forth. So when I married my husband, Ted, here, 16 years ago, my main compliment at the time about him was he is the same person that you see and talk to is who I see. and talk to behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. To me, that was the biggest gift and relief that I could ever begin to express.
I see why.
I was wondering about, we talked about the tension last night, or the reticence not to speak. I was wondering if it was because of the Christian or religious setting had something to do with that. That could have been awesome, in the sense that it became restrictive. Now we're in God's house, mm-hmm. and God is forgiving, and we should forgive, and so therefore, mm-hmm. But we can't chastise those memories. Mm-hmm. Just listen to what you said. I'm sorry that we haven't been here for the whole situation.
I think one thing that struck me this weekend was the fact that a number of women said they had to leave the church.
That's true.
And that feeds right into what you said. And that really struck me as we left, mm-hmm. and now we're coming back.
But that could have been something.
You don't bring your pain to church.
Yeah. Well, it's not an environment conducive to that kind of thing.
Well, oftentimes when something happens in church, since many of us are so close to that, and we begin to distrust the people in the church, we find ourselves transferring that to distrust the church. Mm-hmm. And so then we tend to want to leave it. Mm-hmm. And then we get an environment we may feel guilty about that, mm-hmm. and then that setting would sort of be restricted, perhaps.
I guess I saw it last night was a little more heterogeneous. Like in your class, people were there, they made a choice that they were supported. And here, people are here because of another reason. Mm-hmm. And so you're not quite sure of how that you want to could open up to a heterogeneous set of beliefs, I guess, mm-hmm. or thoughts.
I was in a workshop conducted by Scott Peck. Does anybody know who he is? And it was very interesting because it was a day and a half long, and there were about 60 people there, and a lot of them were doctors and pastors and professional caregiver types, and then there were a few people like myself. And he did not have much structure to what he was doing, and it made some of these professional psychiatrists especially very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. They came to hear him lecture, and instead he started forming community in a group. And if you've been in that kind of thing, which I fortunately had, I kind of had an idea of what he was doing. And he let everybody become so uncomfortable that finally a few people started to spill their feelings. And I remember that the end, that I had a dream that I related, and I saw Jesus in this dream. The next morning on the way to this group meeting, I had the voice of the Spirit said to me, Marion, you are out of line to disclose that dream in that setting. And because there are people there who are searching for their spiritual identity and so forth and so on. So I went back to, and I felt like somebody hit me on the back like this, and I had to cough it up and say, I want to apologize for what I said yesterday. Oh my goodness, the relief that set in with a few people, and then that triggered a few more people, and before you knew it, it became a more cohesive group, and then more positive things came out of it. So I felt like Ted and I came in on the middle of something last night, mm-hmm. and my mind just kind of went blank.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe by next year I'll get over some of the emotional abuse that I've been through in my life. But one of the side effects of it has been the difficulty in admitting a mistake. I don't know if other people have went through kinds of abuse like that. But I mean, I can remember what a breakthrough it was for me at some point to catch a typo in a paper and feel okay about that. Mm-hmm. Because I was so severely emotionally abused. that those things were like personal failures, flaws in my character, not just typos on a sheet of paper. I mean, it was that bad. It was gradually, not only could I admit to those accidental mistakes, but you know, if I discovered that I had done something wrong or offended another person, I could just take responsibility for it and you know, say that. Being healed of my childhood sexual abuse came at the point when I could just talk about it. Matter of fact, like, yeah, I was one of those. You know, it happened to me too. Mm-hmm. And be more at ease with talking about that and not feeling like it was a sign of personal failure to talk about it. I guess the whole purpose for a service like that last night was just to be able to say, look, this abuse is everywhere. Here's the kind that's happened to me. Let me put this into the care of a community. Mm-hmm. But I guess what came home to me is that the community is not at that place of healing yet.
Okay. If the service had been simply the people that had started and gone do you think that would
yeah. Mm-hmm. I could understand it, for instance, because it wasn't a weekend devoted primarily to women, that there would be men here who would say, hey, I hurt too. And there would be a certain amount of resentment.
Well, because I wanted them to be included too. I mean,
yes, I understand that, but I also
acknowledge that.
I can also understand that they might be there saying, well, you know, because we are human and it's very easy. That we quickly can build a little resentment that just pop up.
We had more people last night than we had at any of the others. That may be the whole thing. There were people here who had not been.
Right.
I think maybe that made the rest of us feel a little bit uneasy about saying.
Sure.
Yeah. I think that's an only human.
And so.
Which means we're really not ready to admit we have a problem.
Yeah, when you go back to your churches of 200, 400, 500 people after leaving Holden at some point, notice how much more difficult it will be to create a climate where people can straightforwardly deal with violence and work on the theology that makes it difficult for people to speak because of the problem of forgiveness, problem of the sacredness and feeling that you violate it by your very presence. I have no other things on the agenda except to say that I wish people healing out of this experience this weekend. It's been enriching for me to hear other people's pain. It's been a part of my process of healing. It's been great to watch people use their minds and hearts to think of alternative ways of being in the world that is violent. Should we pray or something?
Before we pray, I'd like to just suggest something.
Yeah.
I want to talk about abuse right now.
Sure.
And this is just be helpful to you, I think. When I first sat down here and started listening, I thought, well, maybe this is only a discussion for women. Maybe only women are supposed to be here. Mm-hmm. Because until I spoke, your eye, line of sight, unless that was purposefully done, was right through here, included that part of the room and didn't include me. Unless that was purposefully done, that was the type of abuse. I kept wondering, why won't she just, she's including the classroom, but it always stops and goes over that way. It's like, until I spoke. And then I started looking out the window, saying, well, let's see how long I can look out and just listen. But I don't know if that was purposefully done or not, some sort of interest in if that was.
No, it wasn't.
So then if it wasn't, then maybe this is good that I'm saying this, in that a person, maybe either your line of sight goes, I don't know, anyway, but that was exclusive. And I didn't, so I had to say that. I mean, Because the subject was a good subject for Father Anderson, absolutely. But I kept thinking, why I'm being abused right now? Mm-hmm. I'm not a part of this group. That site, and interesting, I kept watching the eye, and it just went right there. Mm-hmm. And like it was a wall there. And but I could see it went all the way to, and then when it came back to here even.
I guess teachers have a way of looking to the people who have spoken before.
Well, that's true.
Knowing that they will speak again, yeah, and watching for the visual clues, and I'm sure that I was doing that unconsciously. I have tried to be very careful to say that men ought to be a part of this retreat. I hope it was announced. So that people knew that that was the case. And I apologize to them.
Well, I thought I'm going to speak to you, Pablo. I said, well, we're going to pray with you. I get in community right away.
You're right, truly, yeah. That's great. That's great.
And so I just thought, I teach too, so I know it's enough to talk to.
Of it is, knowing that there's so many introverts here, I don't like to put new people on the spot. You know, the other trick teachers have is they stare down students until they finally say something. I'm trying to get the quiet ones finally to speak up, and so I try not to do that too.
Anybody Wednesday?
Mm-hmm. We're coming back.
No, we're doing a thing Wednesday night on community.
Oh, really?
I was wondering if maybe you might want to be part of that. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I can't do
this Wednesday. This Wednesday, we're doing a 1 hour session on community. I was going to ask you if you wanted to be part of that, but if you're leaving Wednesday,
we have to come back.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay. Just doing business here. We're going to pray. It's fine.
And we don't have to pray. That's just an offering of God. Something we could do. May not feel right for some of you who have been uncomfortable with the church and its practices from time to time.
Why don't you just do the benediction for us?
Oh, that's an idea. Oh, well, here she is. On the spot, she'll create one. Let's go from this place, creating safe places for other people and for ourselves. Let's go from this place committed to naming the violences that we experience and trying to teach each other. Go in peace, knowing that we truly serve God. Amen.
Amen. Amen.